From Greenville to Jersey Shore, Jeffersonville to Katanning, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the American Legislative Exchange Council has published its annual Rich States, Poor States report. How does Pennsylvania's economic competitiveness compare to the other 49 states? Jonathan Williams is here with the answer. New jobs numbers are out, and while the Pittsburgh region is gaining jobs, it lags the national average. Frank Gamrat and Eric Montardi have details on this week's Allegheny Institute report. And it is budget season under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania discusses a few principles for developing that budget on this week's Lincoln Radio Journal Commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. Tax policy and business climates vary widely from state to state, but overall, this year's Rich States, Poor States report finds improvement. Jonathan Williams is chief economist and vice president of the Center for State Fiscal Reform at the American Legislative Exchange Council. He is also co-author of the Rich States, Poor States report. Jonathan joins us now to talk about the report and how Pennsylvania fares compared to other states. Jonathan, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Jonathan, before we start talking about the findings of the Rich States, Poor States report, tell us a little bit about the report. What is it? How did it get started? And what are you researching and finding?
Well, this report's now been around since 2007, and Art Laffer, of course, of Ronald Reagan fame as economic advisor, and Stephen Moore and I have put it together for these more than a decade now to give state legislators and concerned citizens across the country a way to measure their state to how it ranks economically, both in how it's done over the last decade, as well as, more importantly, where that state is headed and how competitive that state's policies are for future job creation and economic growth. And what we've really found is over these now 10, 12 years that we've been putting together the report, not only are states and state lawmakers paying attention and listening to the findings of the report, is that the states have followed the framework, becoming more free market, lower tax, more freedom oriented as a state, are seeing and enjoying the economic results of those actions, while the states on the other side of the spectrum that have been following the tax and spend approach continue to have major problems economically.
And as you develop the report, what sort of factors go into it?
We have 15 different factors that we measure in rich states, poor states. And while you can, Loman, see probably 1,000 different things that you could rank states on, and we see all these rankings out there today, we chose these 15 for a couple of big reasons. First of all, we know that these 15, such as taxes and labor policy and regulation, are things that matter directly to the bottom line of a state, to the economic competitiveness of the state. We know this from the academic research, from small business input, from the long tenure of research of Arthur Laffer. But more importantly, perhaps even, and we see all these rankings that measure things that are very, very difficult to actually put a price tag on, things like quality of life or weather or things like that. Now, while they matter for people, we know that state legislators in the 50 state capitals only can control public policy. And so that's why everything that we measure in rich states, poor states, we know has a proven impact on economic competitiveness, but also there are things that state legislators have direct control over as part of their legislative duties.
What were the important developments that you noticed in 2018 relative to where the states were a year or two earlier?
Well, one of the big things that we've noticed in the last year is just how good of a picture things are now at the state legislative level for budgets and economics. We have seen, and this is due to a couple of different things, but because of, A, the economic recovery since the start of the Trump administration and because of many, many good policies such as tax cuts and regulatory relief coming out of Washington, D.C., very few states are facing budget problems since it's a big reversal from just a couple of years ago, Loman, where we saw the majority of states facing red ink in some cases during the very slow economic recovery after 2008 and the Obama years. And this has been a huge turnaround now, where we saw only about a handful of states starting out 2019 with a budget deficit. And what that's meant is There's been a lot of discussions about tax cuts. There's been a lot of discussions about how to make the states more competitive. But on the other side, those that would like to spend all of those extra dollars and take advantage of this windfall, they would like to spend it on lots of different projects. And so that's really been one of the big debates across state capitals in the last year. And we talk about it in depth in the first chapter of Rich States, Poor States.
As we look at the impact of the fact that, Jonathan, the states have more money available because of the federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act and the fact that people are actually getting to keep more of their money, as we look at that, have any states made definitive decisions yet as to what they are going to do with the additional revenue that we see coming into many state coffers, or is it all still in the discussion stage?
Well, certainly we've seen some fantastic wins for the free market side in the states over the last 12 months after the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. And what it meant was for the states that have income taxes, they generally start with federal adjusted gross income as well. And what that meant was when the federal tax base was broadened, the states had all this extra money. And what we saw was in the first few months of 2018 even, we saw several states enact historic tax relief and tax reform efforts of their own, such as Iowa and Missouri, bordering states that know what it means to become more competitive. We saw Idaho, we saw Georgia. States across the country have utilized this really once-in-a-generation opportunity of having these extra dollars that were unbudgeted, which is so important, and they're ongoing. So they had these dollars sitting there, and they used them to buy down personal and corporate income tax rates, to enhance standard deductions, personal exemptions, things to reduce their tax burden and make their tax codes more competitive.
And Jonathan, one of the components of the Rich States, Poor States report is you do an index and you rank states according to economic competitiveness. Everybody loves a horse race, so tell us who are the top five, top 10, what states are doing the best in your ranking?
Well, this has been a predictable story for some time now, Loman, at least at the top of the rankings, in that the state of Utah has been a state that has been number one for all 11 editions of Rich States, Poor States. And there's a couple of really interesting reasons why I think that's the case. And then they've been joined more recently with some other of the states to move into the top five. But Utah's, I think, secret to success has really been punctuated by a couple of policy changes over the last decade. One was they created a flat tax. This is something that some states already have. Of course, we have the nine states, which is one of the key parts of our research, that go without income taxes altogether, and that's a great economic benefit to those states. But Utah went from a progressive income tax to a flat tax a little over 10 years ago. They also reformed their pension system. I know this is not an item that legislators take lightly, as these massive unfunded liabilities are growing within all state systems. Utah helped to solve that years ago. And then finally, they have found really an innovative way of keeping property taxes at bay. This is something that, you know, so many constituents weigh in with their state legislators and local officials saying that the property tax bills are getting too high and it's forcing people out of their homes. Utah really found a great policy tool to help keep burdens low. So, I mean, if you look at those three policy reforms addressing some of the biggest and most important issues facing estate competitiveness in our ranking, you really don't have to wonder too much why Utah's kept at number one at the rankings over the last 10, 11 years now. They were recently joined in the top by Idaho, a state that I mentioned just recently, is a state that leveraged federal tax reform and had their biggest tax cuts in 25 years on income taxes in this last year. Indiana, a state that was middle of the road just maybe 5 years ago, now is at number three. North Dakota and Arizona round up the top five. But these are states that are serious about keeping costs down, keeping business environments good. And as a result, they've seen some very good economic outcomes in terms of in-migration, job creation, and wage growth.
Conversely, let's take a look at the bottom five or six states.
Well, probably not a lot of surprises on the bottom of this list either. New York, 50th out of 50, has been that way for nearly every edition of Rich States, Poor States. And now, even in recent weeks where you've had Governor Andrew Cuomo complain that they've had this out-migration of people and businesses out of the state, even Andrew Cuomo is now realizing, I think, that New York is a high-cost place to do business. And so that's not a surprise, not being a right-to-work state, having some of the highest corporate and personal income taxes, not to mention property and sales in America. Vermont, Bernie Sanders' home, has been at 49 for many of our years of our report. But one thing interesting to note, Loman, about Vermont is they even cut taxes this last year because of the surplus revenues that were sitting there from the Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. So it wasn't just a red state phenomenon. Even Bernie Sanders' Vermont used that opportunity to cut income taxes this last year. And then we have Illinois, California, and New Jersey. New Jersey, of course, is a state that will probably be falling further in the rankings, as just this last week or two, we saw Governor Phil Murphy sign a $15 an hour minimum wage bill into law, making New Jersey even more expensive for job creators.
Let's talk for a couple of minutes about Pennsylvania in particular, Jonathan. Where does Pennsylvania stand on this index?
Pennsylvania comes in at 38th this year in the index, which, you know, certainly is not something to be happy about for legislators around Harrisburg or certainly for concerned taxpayers. This is a falling of the ranking we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years from a best of Pennsylvania's ranking in our history of our index at 33 down to 38. Now, there is something to be said. Even you can fall behind in this environment with it being so competitive today across the states just by standing still. And while legislative conservatives have been able to stop many of the worst of the worst tax increases proposed by Governor Wolf in Pennsylvania, certainly that's not quite enough to keep up with many of the states that have used, let's say, the federal tax reform opportunity to cut taxes and become more competitive. So I certainly think it's possible that just given the dynamics that we've seen across the states in the last few months, that Pennsylvania's ranking could fall further. A couple of things that stand out there in Pennsylvania's ranking to keep Pennsylvania in that bottom tier of states is clearly having a state-level death tax, not being a right-to-work state, having the second highest business tax rates in America. And then you look at other things like, you know, certainly property taxes are above average. And down the line, you can look at our richstatespoorstates.org website to look at all of the ways that Pennsylvania measures up against the other 49 states.
We have been talking with Jonathan Williams, who is chief economist and vice president of the Center for State Fiscal Reform at the American Legislative Exchange Council. And Jonathan, tell us a little bit about ALEC and also, again, give us the website where folks can go to read the Rich States, Poor States report.
ALEC has been around now for 45 years, created to be an organization that spreads best practices, realizing that we don't have horses in the races across state capitals, that we are there to talk about conservative, free markets, limited government, federalism, our three guiding principles, but we're nonpartisan. And we work with legislators across the board, Republican, Democrat, Independent, Libertarian, Vegetarian. We support legislators that want to do the right thing and be principled on policy issues, and it's a great organization. So if your lawmaker is not involved with ALEC, you know, talk to them about getting involved. We'd love to have them. And our website is richstatespoorstates.org, where you can go to download the new 11th edition of Rich States, Poor States for free. And it also gives you access to all previous editions of the report. So you can see not only where states rank in 2019, but all of the last 11 editions of the report.
Jonathan Williams, who is co-author of Rich States, Poor States, also chief economist and vice president of the Center for State Fiscal Reform at ALEC. Jonathan, thank you for being with us.
Always great to be with you, my friend.
The Pittsburgh region has seen an upswing in job opportunities, but southwestern Pennsylvania lags behind the national average for job creation. Here to sort through all the numbers are Eric Montardi and Frank Gamrat from the Allegheny Institute for Public Policy. Eric?
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is my colleague Frank Gamrat, the Executive Director of the Allegheny Institute. Frank, your most recent policy brief, which is available at our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org, looks at job growth in the Pittsburgh metropolitan area in the last year, basically from December 2017 to December 2018. And you have a couple of measurements in there. Let's just do a little bit of background, I guess, at the first point. When you talk about private job growth and there's adjustments and the like, just give our listeners, I mean, basically, what's the background when we're talking private job growth?
Oh, absolutely. When the Bureau of Labor Statistics nationally and, of course, the Pennsylvania Department of Labor and Industry statewide, they do surveys. They do employer surveys. They do household surveys. We like to focus on the employer surveys for this particular brief. And they look at payrolls. How have payrolls gone up? How have they gone down? Household surveys tend to be a little more of a phone call. Hey, were you working this week for pay? How much? And more of an opinion based on whoever's on the other side of the phone conversation. Whereas these employer surveys are, they're asking asking them about their payrolls. And we talk about total private jobs. We are including farm jobs, but non-government jobs. There's two methods here, total private and total non-farm. And, of course, total non-farm excludes the agricultural sector but includes the government sector. We include the agricultural sector and exclude the government sector. So total private jobs is the measure that we use for this particular brief. And we notice a growth nationally from December 17 to December 18 was about 2%, 2.02%. But in Pittsburgh, it was a whole lot less. It was only 0.75%. Now, in whole numbers terms, you had about 8,100 jobs added to the Pittsburgh Metropolitan Statistical Area, which consists of seven counties: Allegheny, Armstrong, Beaver, Butler, Fayette, Washington, Westmoreland. And so with those counties being asked about the payrolls for firms in there, 8,100 jobs out of a total 1 million jobs is really not a very big percentage, and it's just not a whole lot of growth.
Frank, one of the things you did in the brief was to look at a couple other metro areas. So, and since you have a couple measurements in there, we'll kind of do, I don't want to call this rapid fire, but sure, we'll do a little bit of, I'll give you the shorthand, like the nationwide growth, the topic area, and then you can kind of tell us, you know, where these other metros ranked in regards to Pittsburgh. But first, let our listeners know, I mean, what other metros did you look at?
Absolutely. We just looked at three similarly sized metros: Columbus, Ohio; Indianapolis, Indiana; and Nashville, Tennessee. Columbus and Indianapolis are just shy of 1 million jobs in our metro. Nashville's at 900,000 jobs. So relatively close in size. And when we look at their growth, for example, the best metro in the small sample, including Pittsburgh, was Indianapolis. They grew to 2.3% clip total private jobs, followed by Nashville at 2.14%, Columbus at 1.72%. So while Indianapolis and Nashville were better than the national growth levels, Columbus was slightly lower than. But again, Pittsburgh, 0.75%. Not only are they trailing in the small sample, they're trailing way behind.
Okay, so there we go. So on the private job growth, we have two metros above, mm-hmm, two metros below. Right. Let's look at goods producing. Your brief says that nationally, again, so from December 2017 to December, mm-hmm, 2018, the increase in goods producing jobs, which you can, you know, give a little background on what they are, right, was 3.13%. How did the metros rank in comparison, mm-hmm, to that percentage?
All right, a little background first. You know, total private jobs can be divided into two categories: goods producing, which is primarily mining and logging, construction, and manufacturing, or private service providing, which again is a lot of other sectors. And as you mentioned, one, well, I guess you haven't mentioned it yet, but you will shortly. The other measures we looked at are education, health, and leisure and hospitality, but also, you know, business, professional services, finance, information. You know, there's quite a few service providing sectors in there. But let's start with goods producing first. You know, goods producing, again, the national growth rate is 3.13%. Again, that was spurred on by a good amount of manufacturing jobs across the nation. The highest level there was Indianapolis. Indianapolis came in at 5.67% growth of the goods producing sector of the economy. Pittsburgh was actually second in this sample at 1.41% goods producing. And Pittsburgh had a strong showing in the construction sector of the economy, which is what gave them a nice little boost. And then Columbus was slightly behind Pittsburgh at 1.33%. Nashville actually had a loss in their goods producing at 0.88%. A lot of that has to do with their manufacturing sector falling off.
Okay, let's move over to service producing next. And again, mm-hmm, you can tell us a little background on what would be in there. But the U.S. growth rate was 1.81%, mm-hmm, in that year's period. So again, how did these four metros rank?
Yeah, in private service providing, I said it's a service sector industries, you know, what, you know, education and medicine is the most frequently referenced. Leisure and hospitality is also referenced in our report. But yeah, like you mentioned, the national is 1.81%, which is well below the goods producing growth rate. And the high there is in Nashville. Nashville, Tennessee came in at 2.64% growth rate, 19,900 jobs. The low end was Pittsburgh at only 0.64%. They added 5,900 jobs to the payrolls, December 18 versus what was there in December 2017. And in the middle, of course, you have Columbus at 1.8% and Indianapolis at 1.7%. So those two, their growth was a little closer but a little shy of the national rate. But again, this covers a lot of different subsectors that we wanted to delve into.
All right, Frank, let's finish with the eds and meds category, which you talked about. And we know here in Pittsburgh, we hear a lot about the hospitals, mm-hmm. the universities. U.S. growth in that year's time period was 2.25%.
Correct.
People might be surprised to hear where Pittsburgh finished last year.
Yeah, the reason I wanted to look at this one is, you know, constantly we hear on the media that we're eds and meds, hospitals and universities, and that's our strength. But our year-over-year growth in December came in only 0.47%, not even 0.5%. It's only an increase of 1,200 jobs. You know, the high watermark out of our small sample was Columbus. They had a 3.21% growth. Of course, Columbus, if anyone's ever been there, is dominated by Ohio State and its university and hospital system. Indianapolis came in second at 1.86%, and then finally Nashville 1.72%. So we're not as strong in education health as people would like to think. A lot of that has to do with the declining of actual hospitals and the changing face of medicine going over to doctor's offices and ambulatory health care. One last thing I'd like to squeeze in is leisure and hospitality. And the reason I say that is this is the one area Pittsburgh does, in fact, excel. And the national average is only 1.18%, but Pittsburgh was 2.3% growth. Now, again, the reason why we want to concentrate on this is not a sector where you have high-paying jobs, so to speak. This is eating and drinking places, leisure and hospitality covers arts, entertainment, inns, and hotels. They tend to be lower paying, and this is not really the sector where you want to grow. You're talking about an average weekly wage in Pennsylvania of only $385-ish, whereas in manufacturing, it's coming at $880 per week. So there's a nice discrepancy in the wages that earn in the two different sectors. So it's not an area where we want to see growth, but it is the area where we do see growth. And I think that's going to present a problem down the line for the collection of tax revenues going forward.
Frank, great stuff as always, and of course our listeners can view this brief and read it and look a little bit more in depth at it at our website, which is www.alleghenyinstitute.org. You can also follow us on Twitter. For Frank Gamrat, this is Eric Montarni. This has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Legislators are hard at work developing Pennsylvania's 2019-2020 budget. Anna McCausland of Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary on some principles that should guide the budgetary process. Anna?
Americans for Prosperity is at the forefront of big, bold policies that drive Pennsylvania toward greater economic growth and eliminating things that keep people from living their version of the American dream. That is what the Tax Cut and Jobs Act did for millions of people across our nation. You may not have as big as a refund as you did last year, but you've been able to keep more of your money throughout the year. I'd rather keep more of my money and have a smaller return than the government take more of the income that I've worked for and give some of my own money back to me each April. Okay, enough ranting. How does this fit into Pennsylvania? For the past 3 years, the budget process in Pennsylvania has taken a decidedly negative turn. Instead of bold reform and vision, previous legislative leaders have sought to negotiate with the governor during the budget time and look to industries to tax to increase revenue. The vaping industry was one such casualty of the 2016-17 budget agreement. With the enactment of that budget, vape shop owners, most of whom are small business owners, saw a 40% tax on their current inventory. Over the course of a year, about 140 small businesses closed due to that one action by the General Assembly. Pennsylvania can no longer afford to specifically target an industry to prop up bad spending decisions. Businesses and residents are leaving the state for better economies elsewhere. Pennsylvania's legislators could learn a lesson from that bold action of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act and work to comprehensively reform Pennsylvania's business and individual tax structure. This year, we're calling on the governor and legislative leaders to streamline and simplify our tax code to make the state more competitive. In crafting comprehensive tax reform, lawmakers should focus on the following three basic principles to guide their efforts. First, it should be competitive. At 9.99%, Pennsylvania has one of the highest corporate tax rates in the country. Such a high rate makes us less competitive with other states, as well as internationally. Lawmakers should lower our corporate tax rate so Pennsylvania businesses can compete and our economy can thrive and grow. Second, it should be simple. The individual side of Pennsylvania's tax code has a desirably low and flat 3.07% income tax rate. However, there are complexities that should be addressed and simplified as part of a larger tax reform package. For example, Pennsylvania should eliminate its confusing and outdated income classification system. Lawmakers should also consider options for simplifying tax authority, such as addressing the number and variety of allowing local taxing authorities and adopting simple, clear assessment cycles for real property taxes. Third, it should be fair. The state of Pennsylvania gives away hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars in corporate welfare each year, much of that coming through tax subsidies. The government shouldn't be picking winners and losers in the tax code. Lawmakers should review and eliminate the existing business tax credits in favor of lowering the overall corporate tax rate. That would create a more level playing field for Pennsylvania businesses when it comes to their tax liability. There's also two core principles that lawmakers should be focused on as they work to develop tax reform legislation this session. There should be no net increase in taxes, and keep it clean. Don't load this bill up with unnecessary and unrelated issues. We don't need a reason for the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to find the bill unconstitutional. Soon, we'll be all over Pennsylvania talking about comprehensive tax reform. We encourage people to talk to their legislators. Let them know now is the time for bold vision and leadership in the Commonwealth. I'm Anna McCausland, Deputy State Director with Americans for Prosperity. Find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania, on Facebook by searching for AFP Pennsylvania, and on our website, AmericansForProsperity.org.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and the all-new LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth. They include WRPV-FM in Clearfield, WRXV-FM in Huntington, along with WRWV-FM in Lock Haven, Pennsylvania. And the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is coming up in a few weeks. This year is the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, which will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel, Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation, K. Cole James of the Heritage Foundation, Mark Janis from the Liberty Justice Center, Salita Zeno of the Washington Examiner, Tim Gagline from Focus on the Family, Congressman Scott Perry, and numerous others will also speak. There will be panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from across the state. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, and the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.
Thank you.